The second XPRIZE Cup is in the books. Time for some final thoughts. I'm Paul Plagg, and this is Aero News. It's Friday, October 27th, 2006. It's been over a week since the countdown timer on the XPRIZE Cup's website reached zero, and the event began. It's time, given the benefit of a week's perspective, and just as important, a week's rest, to take a first look back and a look ahead to the future. ANN's Jim Campbell was there in a number of capacities. Jim, thanks for taking a few minutes out to join us.
Always happy to help, Paul.
Well, listen, you were as much an insider as you were a journalist there. You're involved in a lot of different aspects of it. Let me just start out by asking you the general question of what is the importance of the XPRIZE Cup to general aviation and to the general public?
Well, when Peter Diamandis first envisioned the XPRIZE Cup with the prodding of Greg Marinac, who now runs the St. Louis Science Center, they realized that the XPRIZE was a phenomenal development and it was going to be a major watershed in history. But the thing they were concerned about is that once the XPRIZE was won, as it was just a little over 2 years ago now, that there had to be a way to not only continue the public's enthusiasm for private space, but a place to serve as a gathering point for all those who are dedicated to opening up space to private enterprise and to private individuals. Thus, the XPRIZE Cup, an annual gathering point for all that's new and unusual and interesting and important, and more important at all, competitive in private space, was born. This year was the second iteration of the XPRIZE Cup, and it was the first time that a prize instigated by NASA and administered by the XPRIZE Foundation was actually in contention.
You know, one of the biggest parts of the story of Spaceship One, at least for me, was that compared to what NASA spends to do a project, this thing was done for peanuts. And it had to occur to NASA that if your goal is advancing the space program and advancing space exploration, that A, getting the private sector involved is a good idea, and B, the amount of money that you'd need to seed a prize like this is an incredible bang for the buck.
Well, one of the things that Burt Rutan and Paul Allen were fond of talking about was that they did the entire Spaceship One program for less than the paper costs of a typical NASA study. And I've actually seen the costs of some of NASA's research studies, and they're not wrong. Although the oft-repeated rumor that it's less than NASA's toilet paper budget has yet to be countenanced and verified, but we'll see.
All right. Well, $2.5 million, roughly, is what was in the prize kitty this year for all the different competitions together. NASA has to look at that and just consider that extremely well spent.
In three different ways. First of all, they get to identify who the players are, who the geniuses are, who the folks are who have new and unusual ideas, number one. Number two, it shows the public that NASA is not the old NASA, but the new NASA that's looking for new ways of doing things. There's a little bit of the old inventiveness that comes out when NASA says, hey, look, we're ready for all comers here. We're ready for everybody to take a shot at this. And then finally, it is NASA's way of bridging the gap between the old bureaucracy and the new reality of the fact, and mind you, I say the fact, that space is everybody's future.
Well, and I have to think, too, that in a time when NASA struggles for budget, it's populated with people who love space as well. And if they have a chance to see things get accomplished, that's probably a bigger gas to most of those people than getting the budget to do it on their own.
Absolutely.
We've talked a little bit about the event overall, but let me ask you about some specifics that we could maybe hear a little more about. Armadillo Aerospace. A couple of days before the event was supposed to come off at Las Cruces, the FAA said that they were kind of scared by the way that these landers looked. They managed to pass the initial muster, and then they did perform on the weekend. Tell us how that went. Did they achieve their goals?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think Armadillo succeeded in some ways beyond their wildest dreams. No, they did not win the first-tier prize. They came awfully close. And one of the things that's interesting, since Aero News provided the news pool footage, stills, and coverage for XPRIZE, and we've been their official news team since day one and even back to the Spaceship One launches, we had unusual access. I was out at the proving areas where these flights were taken as close as the judges were, and they were the closest ones allowed to it. So we had a chance to see this up close and personal, plus watch this team perform. And I have to tell you, this is a small team. They're barely, not even a dozen people involved, barely half of that, actually, but seen at any one time. And they perform magnificently. Now, mind you, Pixel, the one of the two landers that was in contention and the one that flew the most, ultimately failed to achieve its goal in the last flight on Saturday. But one of the things that that's interesting is the FAA is very concerned about abort and emergency procedures because Pixel had damage done on the next-to-last landing, the one that qualified them for the first half of the first-tier prize and the one that almost got them there. They had done damage to the landing gear leg, and on takeoff on the final try, that landing gear leg gave way because as it builds up thrust, it does a little bit of skittering on the pad, and that just busted it off. So as a result, the lander tilted in sympathy with the lost gear leg. There's an automatic abort sequence that shuts the engine down once it gets past a certain parameter, which in this case I think was somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 degrees banked over. And the engine shut off clean, and it's interesting that even though it fell in from at least 20 feet in the air, and I've got pictures of the entire sequence, hit the ground hard, no explosion, no visible fire, no big deal. I mean, there was a lot of damage done to the vehicle, but in other words, the emergency systems, the abort systems functioned flawlessly, and because the engines shut down so quickly and so readily, the vehicle did not endanger anybody in any way, and the FAA came away with a tremendously positive impression of their experience and their effort.
Tell us about the Tripoli rocket launches. Tell us what Tripoli is, first of all, and what are these rockets used for? They're called sounding rockets, but what is that?
Well, Tripoli is a group of amateur rocketeers. These are people who take the Estes rocket that we all grew up with as kids and take them to almost ludicrous lengths, except when you look at them, the passion, the expertise. A lot of these people are involved in aerospace on a professional level, and this is what they do for fun. They had a vehicle out there that not only went 22,000 feet high on one of its launches, it exceeded Mach 2 on its way up. They're telemetered, they're instrumented, they're just tremendously well prepared. This is a group of quote-unquote amateur professionals, I guess would be the best way to truly explain who and what they are. But there were a half a dozen truly impressive launches of these tremendously complex, small-sounding rockets with phenomenal capabilities. I can tell you in no uncertain terms, hanging with the judges that were judging the Armadillo crew, these were guys, I mean, one of the guys we were hanging with is a guy who helped design the Mercury Atlas. There were astronauts, there were people from NASA, people from a number of areas of aerospace, and they were all deeply appreciative of the professionalism that these so-called amateurs were displaying throughout the event. And let's face it, a live rocket launch and watching those things corkscrew into the sky and the big plume and watch them come down under the chute is a tremendous crowd pleaser.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the space elevator. A few years ago, I think it was Popular Mechanics cover that I saw at a barbershop, and it showed a diagram of what this plan was going to be. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, a lot of things that are on the cover of these magazines never come to pass. This one looks like it's actually being pursued. Tell us about these two challenges. What happened in the Power Beam Challenge, where contestants were challenged to make a small vehicle that could climb a tether and carry a payload for $200,000 in prize money?
Well, what's fascinating about this particular challenge is this really is rocket science. This is tremendously complex engineering that has to be simplified in execution to work under a number of circumstances. In some ways, the most intriguing intellectual efforts were involved in this particular challenge. And in fact, in many ways, many of these challengers, successful and not, really met a tremendous number of the parameters involved and impressed everyone universally. There is a significant effort on their part, a lot of very ingenious paths taken to meet some problems, and while not everybody succeeded as they would have, I think for a first iteration at the X Prize Cup, I think everybody came away with a sense of, wow, who are these guys and how did they get to be this smart? And I can't wait to see what they do next.
Well, now, the premise of the space elevator is that there will be a tether held in place on the surface of the Earth, extending out into space and held taut by a counterweight that's beyond geosynchronous orbit, and that these vehicles will climb the tether to take cargo and human beings into space.
Correct.
Is there a realistic chance that what they're competing with in the XPRIZE Cup can be scaled up to actually do that someday?
Well, actually, the way the competition was designed was if, in fact, this tether existed, that these power sources and the means by which they access this power source technically could have been used had the tether existed right now. There's very little question in anybody's mind that the beginnings of something that could have climbed an orbital tether were seen in Las Cruces, New Mexico this past week.
We'll be back with Jim Campbell to review the 2006 Wirefly XPRIZE Cup in just a moment. But first, this AeroCast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V-220 and V-300T engines.
How smart is the engine in your aircraft? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as smart and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V-220 and V-300T from Aircraft Engine Services and their state-of-the-art engine management system. Both the V-220 and the V-300T feature a fully redundant and certified engine management system that controls all engine operation parameters. This EMS includes a true FADEC that manages propeller pitch and other elements of engine operation not usually controlled by the EMS in piston aircraft engines. The EMS automatically provides an optimum fuel mix by constantly measuring the manifold pressure, ambient pressure, engine speed, and throttle positioning, and calculating the appropriate fuel injection timing for each cycle and cylinder. The AES V-220 and V-300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh, so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at theaircraftengine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 400 is a fire-breathing turbocharged four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises 235 knots with a next-generation Avidyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. As high as flight level 250, way above most weather, and a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 400 is the kind of plane you deserve, whether you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144. Check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset designed for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to our Aero News special feature. We're talking with ANN's Jim Campbell about the 2006 XPRIZE Cup. Now, Jim, it looked like the crowd was up considerably over last year's event, and there were about 5,000 school kids there on school day. How was reaction to that opportunity?
It was fascinating to watch the kids, and I so appreciated Governor Bill Richardson taking time upon his entrance to not only meet a lot of the folks from the space community, and he made a big point of stopping by my friends at the Rocket Racing League and talking about the unveiling of the first vehicle, Thunder Hawk, and the talking about how rocket racing will be coming to Las Cruces. But he spent considerable amounts of time talking to kids and urging them on to educating themselves so that the next generation of space scientists, space engineers, rocketeers, and astronauts could literally say they got started at the XPRIZE Cup, and Bill Richardson helped cheer them on.
What is the sense among the organizers of the XPRIZE Cup? Will this get to the point where in a couple of years this is, you know, seeing 100,000 people show up?
Well, Peter Diamandis, who is the visionary behind the XPRIZE concept, has told me personally that he wants to build the Oshkosh of space. And I have to tell you, if that is his ultimate goal, I think he's well on his way.
They promised a theme park on the ground, unquote, in the literature leading up to the XPRIZE Cup weekend. Do you think they pulled that off? It certainly looked like they had enough going on the ground to keep people excited between exciting things in the sky.
I think they did a lot. I mean, there's no question, and Peter will be the first to tell you, that they have a lot to learn about running events like this. But I think the improvements made between year one and year two are significant and notable and certainly impressive. I think now that they've got two of these under their belt, there's some real serious consideration not only to what they do to top all this for number three, but to do so in a way that not only meets their mission goals, but now provides a much better visitor experience for those who make their way out there. There's a lot to see and a lot to do, but they've got ideas now about how to increase the value proposition for the folks coming through the gate. And I think they're on their way. I mean, there's no question there's a lot to learn here. And we had some interesting talks with some of the vendors about what they should or should not do. And I think they took all that to heart. And I think there's some very serious consideration about how to do this in the future.
Now, Las Cruces, New Mexico, and the Mojave facility where Burt Rutan's located in California, I guess they have slightly different goals, but they are somewhat competitors. Do the folks in Las Cruces feel that they may have gained a leg up in this race to establish a spaceport?
Well, I think Las Cruces is a leader. Las Cruces is the home of the Rocket Racing League. It's going to be where Richard Branson is going to be operating some of his Virgin Galactic operations. Up Aerospace is doing launches out of there. The Tripoli folks, of course, are using it. There's a number of other companies and businesses that are looking at Las Cruces with a very critical eye. I mean, it's a perfect place for a launch. This area is very well known and steeped, by the way, in aerospace history. You got to remember, Goddard was out there and did some work, and there's a lot of the early development on a number of rocket programs were done in that area. So Las Cruces has a lot to recommend it, and I think in many ways they are going to be a leader, if they're not already, in the burgeoning private space industry.
All right, we've mentioned a couple of times during the interview the Rocket Racing League, and it's going to start up next year. Tell us from your perspective, because you are going to be one of the first four competitors in the Rocket Racing League. Tell us how that all went and what people are thinking about it.
I was privileged last October, a little bit over a year ago, to be one of the four founding pilots chosen to help get the Rocket Racing League underway. Although we've got three teams now announced that have been chosen from private companies that are willing to pony up the money to be able to put together a vehicle and field it, race it, and so forth. And what Granger Whitelaw, who's the CEO of Rocket Racing, and Peter Diamandis, his partner, are calling the NASCAR of rocketry. They are going to do some amazing things. Matter of fact, Bill Richardson, the governor of New Mexico, thinks that rocket racing is going to absolutely eclipse, so to speak, NASCAR in future years, because, you know, it's one thing to watch a car running around the track, but when you see a rocket-powered vehicle leap out on top of 20 feet of bright orange flame heading straight on up for a point in space with others in close proximity racing as if Buck Rogers himself were on board, that's going to be true excitement.
Just watch out for the bumping in the corners.
I'm telling you what, it's going to be amazing. This is the last year at XPRIZE Cup when I get to be a journalist, and next year I got to run around and be one of the rocket pilots, and I kind of got a kick out of the fact that we had this 500 and 1,000 foot limit away from rocket launches. I realize next year when I push the button, I'm going to be anywhere from 18 to 24 inches away from hardware that's attached to a rocket, and that's going to be an interesting moment just as you get ready to turn the whole thing on and light it off.
We've been talking with ANN's Jim Campbell, who I guess this is the last year, at least around Las Cruces time, this is the last year we can call him ANN's Jim Campbell. He's going to be the world's Jim Campbell next year. And Jim, we thank you for the insights you've brought us on the X Cup Prize weekend. We really look forward to the event next year.
Well, I'll tell you what, nobody's looking forward to it as much as I or Rick Searfoss, Eric Lindberg, or Sean Tucker, my fellow rocket racing pilots, because next year we are going to put on a show.
Well, Jim, in closing, let's get a few words from David Steinberg of Wirefly, which was the title sponsor of the X Prize Cup this year. There's no better way to declare that the event has been a success than to hear excitement in the voice of the people who sponsored it. And we'll start by asking the obvious question. Why did it make sense for a telecommunications company to be involved as a major sponsor of the XPRIZE Cup?
Well, it's a great question. One of the things we look at is how has the internet enabled people to go better, faster, cheaper? And if you look at what we've done in the wireless business, we've taken what is usually an hour-long process in a retail store. We probably have to go to multiple stores to see everything you'd like to compare. We put it into one online store at Wirefly.com where you can actually shop any rate plan for any carrier in any market. If you think about the way the internet grew up, it's actually a parallel to the way we believe space is going to be created from a business perspective. So both the internet and space were created by the government. In the case of the internet, it was DARPA created it, but it didn't really take its shape until it became commercialized. We believe space will be the same. We believe on the space side, obviously NASA, the U.S. government created the U.S.'s space program, and we believe that the privatization of space and space tourism and all of the things we think that derive from that will drive space to the next frontier.
Well, obviously, the space program has enabled the current communications sophistication that we enjoy today. I mean, let's face it, when NASA started shooting Mercurys into space, the idea of a phone in your pocket was not only heresy, but people look at you kind of strange. But obviously, now things have changed dramatically. So maybe actually this is a fairly good partnership. Tell me, from walking around here, you have to just be agog at what you see here. What's made an impression on you?
Well, I have three children under six, so the Rocket Man was something that I think my kids are really going to like.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought the Lunar Landing Challenge was really interesting because it wasn't just a shoot up in the air, let's see what happens. I was fascinated by the ability to go up, over, down, and repeat. I think Peter has put together with the XPRIZE Foundation an unbelievable few days. And the thing that actually, quite frankly, I found the most amazing was walking around and seeing 5,000 school children. Just to see that many school children in one place learning. Because at the end of the day, you know, we must get our children interested in math and science. We have to. I mean, if we want to be competitive as a nation going forward, in my opinion, we need to do that. Space is cool. And that's one of the reasons we loved aligning the Wirefly brand with this. As Wirefly moves from being a pure online company to one that's going to be marketing offline as we grow the business, we saw this as kind of a launching pad for that, allying ourselves with this type of an event. But at the same time, that quote-unquote cool factor, it gets the kids excited. It's what they really want to do. And we were very clear about the fact that we felt that part of our sponsorship had to be involved in the school day, which we were so excited about, letting those thousands of children in, no cost, just making sure that everybody had access. It was really exciting to me. Even if one child was able to take their life in that direction because of this day, it would actually mean so much to me.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.